Welcome to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, thank you, sir, for that great introduction, and good evening, and welcome to Breaking the Silence. I'm Greg Williams, and you're in my home right here in the, I think, one of the best cities in the world, Houston, Texas. I love Houston, Texas. We are just about 20 miles south of heaven. It is so absolutely awesome here. I just love it. But welcome to the program tonight. We have one of those money back guarantee guests this evening, and we're going to get to them really pretty quick tonight. So I'm going to give all my intro stuff abbreviated this evening, but I want to let you know that if you want to call in and get involved, 888-627-6008, and you can be able to talk to this unbelievable distinguished guest that we have this evening. You have a question or a comment, and it looks like we have a lot of people already starting to make action on the texting and the commenting. You can text me right here during the program, 832-396-6525. That's my personal cell phone number. I'm probably the only goofy guest in the world that lets that out every week, but there it is. If you need to text me during the program at the bottom of the hour, around 8:30 time Central Time, I will check that during our short commercial break, or you can give right on the Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. It looks like we have some activity going on there, and you can comment also that way. Next week, we have a great guest, Sewell. She is a pastor of an online church that is specifically for those that have been abused and trafficked. And it's a worship service, a Bible study, a church just for those people that are hurting in a very unique way. They minister to them. So I'm just looking forward to that in a wonderful way, because that's going to be awesome. Last week, we had a time element with Heidi Chance. She wasn't aware, because her state don't experience the time change that we did. She showed up about 50 minutes late. We were just getting ready to sign off when she came on, but we're rescheduling her, I believe, for the month of April, but a couple weeks after Easter, she'll be back. And we have awesome guests for the next couple months, and tonight is no exception. You know, I always like to share something personal up front. And I was thinking the other day with what was going on in my life that, you know, when you're my age, and you'll see our guest come on, and he is a vibrant, young, good-looking man and full of health. And then here I am, this old, decrepit individual with gray hair, you know, that I have Lou Gehrig's disease and all this stuff that's going on inside of my body. And I think sometimes when you know your life is on the downhill slide, and you know that there's only a few, your time's limited, let's put it that way, only God knows. But when you know that your time's limited, things start to shift in priorities of what's really important. Money's not the most important thing in life. Job's not the most important thing in life. Life is truly about making an impact, not making an income. And if you can get your hands on this, especially the younger people, and start understanding that the life that you have been given, the purpose that you have in this world, and the way that you are wired is to be able to go into the people that you relate to, the people that you cross paths with, work with, in the circle of influence that you're involved in, and be able to make an impact on their life that's going to change their life forever. I really literally, when I wake up out of that chair around 3 o'clock in the morning, tomorrow morning, my prayer before my feet ever gets out of that chair is, Lord, may I touch one person's life today in a way that I never knew that I had the ability to be able to do that. And sometimes it's not the huge thing that makes a difference. Very rarely in my life have I ever come across somebody laying on the railroad tracks, and me jumping on the railroad tracks as the train is rushing to crush them, and I save their life just in the nick of time. That doesn't happen, and that's never happened to me and anybody that I have helped in my lifetime. But having those little things in my life that makes an impact on people, my consistency, my dependability. If you catch this word, it'll change your week. Could be your life, your very presence, not your existence in the office, but your presence in that environment of being able to impact people, influence people, and have an encouragement, not good days and bad days, but a steady flow of encouragement flowing out of you into other people can make all the difference in the world. If I'm lying, I'm dying. I don't know if you remember, 5 or 6 years ago on this program, we had somebody that was a survivor of human trafficking right here on the show. And she shared one person that made the complete difference in her life. And it was the security guard at her high school that stood there and said good morning to her every morning on her way into the building. He never saved her life. He never pulled his gun to shoot somebody that was trying to kidnap her. Just saying good morning, how are you? Letting them know that they have some value. She said that made all the difference. That steady encouragement and presence, and truly having an atmosphere of caring. And then when you ask somebody how they're doing, caring enough to compassionately listen at their answers. We do this all the time. Hey, good morning, how you doing? And then you're already out the door. You don't even sit and wait for them to answer the question. You don't even, do you really even care? But to have that interaction of, hey, good morning, you doing okay today? How's everything going? And having that presence of encouragement is huge for people. A life is not really that important, except in the impact that it has on other people. And that's what my prayer is every single day. And I hope that that's what our impact of what this program is. I can get on the piano there and play a song and entertain and tell you some funny jokes and read you some poems and probably make you cry. But if it doesn't impact you and the guest that we have on doesn't have a story that can change your world and your life, that's why always at the bottom of the hour when we come back from that half-hour break, that short little commercial, we always try to head toward hope. Okay, now this is what's going on in the world. How can we make it better for you? How can we make this that we just talked about for a half hour influence and change and support and encourage you? We need to stay positive. We need to try to mentor somebody. We need to try to be a role model for somebody. We need to practice kindness in every way that we possibly can. We need to recognize this is huge. And our guest has, and I'm getting ready to bring him in. So Thomas, go ahead and bring him in. So I'll shut up. Go ahead and bring Keith in. understanding and recognizing your surroundings is 90% of how to defeat human trafficking. Just opening up your eyes and caring enough to say, hey, wait, something's going on over there, and reporting that, recognizing it, seeing it, and be an advocate for a cause that you truly care about. I think this world has stuck our head in the sand way too long. And pull our heads out and start looking about everything that's going on around us and try to make a difference in your world this week and get involved in somebody's life. And may your prayer be tomorrow morning before you ever get out of your bed, hey, let me touch somebody in a positive way today. Tonight, I tell you what, we have a guest that I have been following, not stalking, but following very closely. I have read several of his books, and I'm going to say after reading three of his books, I guarantee you probably every one of his books, and I think you can see him right there. There's not all of them, but a chunk of them. He is an author 12 times over. He has almost 30 years of experience in the federal and international level, in the county, in the state, in the city, in police work, undercover work, in the DEA. Keith Groundsell, welcome to the program tonight. I could talk about your bio, but it is so absolutely long. Welcome to the program tonight, all the way from the unbelievable place of Haiti, which is where you're absolutely at tonight. Keith, welcome to the program. I'm so proud to have you. I'm honored.
Thank you for having me. It's truly an honor to be on such an amazing radio show and be able to tell my story, you know, which there are many stories out there. And like you said, each of us has a special place on this earth. And if we do God's will and we help people and we impact the way, that's our ticket to get into heaven. And this is what this is all about. It's not to showcase that I'm great or anything like that. It's just I've experienced a lot of things over the last almost three decades of doing this, and I've been blessed enough to sacrifice and live through these trials and tribulations long enough to be able to tell the story in writing. And that's what it's really all about, is leaving behind a story to educate the next population. So people do call and report, hey, I read about this. This is an indicator of human trafficking. Let me dial 911. Police don't care if you're wrong. They would rather you call and be wrong and they investigate it than not call at all. Yeah. And that's a very important factor when you're dealing with police versus citizens. We are one. The police work for the citizens.
When I read Shattered Change, which is right there at the bottom left hand of the screen there of your books on the screen, the first two pages of the statistics and the index at the very back of the book is worth the price of the book. All the rest of it is extra bonus because it's absolutely, and I have read all 50 books on human trafficking. It is the best, hands down, by far, and the most easily understandable. What made you want to write and share about human trafficking, and how has your police work been involved in that? Well, I think pandemic that we have in our country, in our world.
See, I'm a mission-driven type of guy. I have to have some sort of a mission. And at one point, I believe God was leading me towards doing some sort of a nonprofit and rescuing human trafficking victims. And I encountered that, and I'll talk about it later on. You know, I spent 8 years working international as a police advisor in war-torn, post-war, post-earthquake, just horrific environments. And in those environments, that's where human trafficking is the most prevalent because, you know, in Haiti, for example, post-2010 earthquake, you had over 500,000 children homeless immediately thereafter and families that couldn't take care of them. So what do you think happened? A lot of those children were trafficked. And still to this day, those children from 2010 are now young adults and they're, you know, victims of horrific incidents. And a lot of them were taken out in boats and presented all over the world as product, you know, for someone who's willing to pay a certain amount of money, from to be molested all the way to being organ harvested. I mean, it just is so horrific. So over 20 years ago, when I was working deep undercover, I spent about 6 years deep undercover at the city level, the county level, and then eventually I became a special agent with the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration. When I was at the county level, I had the opportunity to purchase a child undercover. The mother was actually selling the child to support her drug habit. And a lot of people didn't believe like this mother was really going to do this. So when this gentleman came forward and said, "Hey, I have a mom who wants to sell her child," a lot of people blew him off. And I said, "No, there's something more to this. Let's place a phone call at least and see if there's something to it." And sure enough, the mother was willing and able to do it. And she had been doing it. And that was the sad part. This boy was around 9 years old. And this mother had been selling him for quite a few years. He's a serious drug addict, had been a drug addict for many years prior to her son being born. And she used to prostitute and use her body. But over the years, she hasn't taken care of her body. And she just, the price for her as a prostitute went downhill to support her drug habit. So she realized when somebody approached her, "I can sell my child. And then I can get high while this is happening to my child." And that is the mindset of a drug addict. And to me, doing a case like that, even when you later on explained it to other officers in your department, what occurred, people didn't believe you. This is before human trafficking was even a label. They didn't call it human trafficking. Yeah. You know, we didn't even have statutes.
What
did
they call it back
then,
Keith?
Like that. Excuse me?
What did they call it back then?
It is exploitation of a minor. We didn't charge her any type of human trafficking statute just because nobody was really aware of it. Around that same time period, our agency, it was Greenville, South Carolina, Greenville County Sheriff's Office, probably one of the most cutting edge in the state of South Carolina. They actually brought in or promoted within a human trafficking investigator for the first time. And then he did very well taking off with the program, but it was so overwhelming that they thought they were going to work it separate from vice and narcotics. And then we realized human trafficking, cartels, terrorists, they're one and the same. They all work together. You know, a cartel member who's already perfected the trade routes, who's already, you know, spread fear and violence like a terrorist organization, you know, they're not afraid to kidnap somebody. They're not afraid to abduct somebody. They have the force, the brute force necessary, so nobody's going to report them to the authorities or fear sudden or instant death of them or their family members. So it's really sad, even nowadays in law enforcement, you know, as a two-time chief of police myself, who's gone into agencies and taken them from not even being ranked in the top 25 safest city to number one in 2 years, or 151st safest city, brought them down 100 safety rankings within less than a year. Only way I did it was going after hardcore cartels, drug traffickers, human trafficking. But in both places as the chief of police, I got instant bumping of heads with elected officials. One, for example, we did it was called Operation Good Time. It was in Simpsonville, South Carolina. We arrested 54 people in a two-day operation. And I was told by some of the council and the mayor at the time that I made the town look like it had a human trafficking problem. So they moved to terminate me for my employment. And it was just like, wow, this is unbelievable that you are going to take this approach. When national television invited me to be on the Today Show, and I had national newspaper articles that were being published, I had chiefs from all around the United States saying, "How did you do this?" Because it was an undercover social media sting. For the first time, we hadn't done that. I'd worked deep undercover for years, but we actually set up an array of different undercover accounts and lured in people and then rescued several human trafficking victims along with got the customers along the way. But what happens is you're going to run into a few prominent people that are caught up in that mix. You're always hearing about like a judge, a lawyer, or somebody like that, or a doctor. And when they get caught up in the mix, then you start taking some heat from some of the politicians that are linked to these people. And for me, that's pretty sad. In my second time as chief of police, I ran into it again doing pedophile stings. I was told to back off on doing so many. We arrested 24 pedophiles in a short period of time. For me, I never backed off because that was just not in my DNA. When I feel like it's the right thing to do, I'm going to do the right thing. But it cost me politically. You know, I was forced out of my positions as chief of police because I was too assertive when it comes to taking initiative and going after these hardcore criminals. And that's what I want more people to realize. When it comes to chiefs of police, they're not guaranteed tomorrow. A sheriff is guaranteed 4 years once they're elected. A chief of police has to be in this political realm where they have to play this. And me, I take the approach of high levels of integrity. No matter what, I will not compromise myself. I refuse to turn a blind eye on something such as human trafficking or pedophiles. And if you have a problem with that, I'm not a good fit for you. And I'd rather go work somewhere else. But sometimes people are intimidated by my approach on these types. But it works. It cleans cities up. Crime drops drastically when you take care of the worst of the worst. 5% of the population commits all the crime, pretty much, for the most part. If you deal with that 5%, you'll reduce crime in every major city, every little city. It doesn't matter.
You know, that was South Carolina. Well, what's supposed to be the Mayberry RFD, you know, area, you know, the beautiful part of the country, not a border state.
I tell you, cartels
being there.
Yeah, absolutely. Cartels are everywhere. They have networks set up. They have cells set up. They'll be in the same city and don't even know one another. They'll have a cell over here that sells drugs. They'll have a cell over here that does money laundering. They have a cell over here that does transport, a cell over here that buys the cell phones, and a cell over here that buys all the assets, the houses and all that. And none of them know each other. And they work for the same organization. So if you take one out, you can't take the other one out. And it is set up so you can't just chop the legs off of the organization. So there might be two or three cells that do distribution in the same city. And you take one of those out, they still got two going on. And they realize it's not going to stop production. It's such a high demand for drugs in America because we have so many drug addicted people that, you know, they're going to keep pushing it and keep pushing it. Same thing with human trafficking. You don't hear about it, but it starts as small as pornography. You know, if you're on there, you think these women on porn.com or all these different porn sites, you think these women are voluntarily doing this? They get called to do a modeling contract, get lured to a hotel, trying to lower their inhibitions because they're nervous. They give them a little bit of alcohol, maybe spike the drink. The next thing you know, they're taking provocative photos. Then they start to blackmail them. Then they're on lockdown. They can't leave 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 days. They're stuck in this hotel room. They're shooting scene after scene, and they make them repeatedly get raped in these scenes until they smile and act like they enjoy it. Then they let them go. And then they tell them, if you say anything, I'm going to release this to your whole family. So what are you going to do? And that, at that point, it's like sextortion. It happens with young kids, too. These young teenagers get online and be like, oh, I hate my parents. You know, my parents don't understand me. And some creeper is in there just waiting. It's like, oh, parents suck. This is a 40-something-year-old man posing as an 18-year-old boy or a 17-year-old boy. Hey, you're beautiful. Send me some pictures. You send a picture. Next thing you know, they're telling you, hey, if you don't send me more pictures, I'm going to release this to everybody. And then eventually you're hearing about suicides that are occurring because these kids feel like they have nowhere to go. And that's where, you know, that's why I started writing my books. I wanted to educate people on these things and make sure we could prevent some deaths. I wanted it to be where parents could just literally read this book or hand this book to their child, and it tells everything. And like you said early on, my book, Shattered Chains, Human Trafficking Uncovered, I've had people tell me they've read it 2 or 3 times because they can't believe how much information is contained in it. There's over 150 references from scholarly citations in the book. It took me years to put all this together, and it's a passion for me. I truly believe education is the key to everything. If we educate people, it can eliminate or prevent them from getting involved. And it can also help them to call us to tell when they see something so we can make more arrests and stop this crap. Because human trafficking is huge.
Help the people that's listening to the program tonight that says, hey, wait, I didn't know it was a big deal, these cartels and things like that. But the celebrity side of this, absolutely. R. Kelly, P. Diddy Combs, Oscars are tonight on TV, the entertainment industry. How much of that in the experience and knowledge and wisdom and undercover and all the stuff that you've been involved with for almost 30 years, have you seen or know about that, hey, wait, it's not the people in the pink Cadillacs with the fur jackets. It's the CEOs. It's major sport teams owners that maybe not be involved in cartels, but they're traveling and dealing with where the money is at. And this, folks, is unfortunately where the money's
Absolutely.
at. What do you know? What can you
So
share with us about that?
think about this. If you remember, over a decade ago, it was pretty public with some people in Hollywood trying to normalize pedophilia as a sexual preference. That was meaning to me, it had been going on for a long, long time, and it was becoming more and more mainstream. And now we're seeing with the Epstein files that this is absolutely something that the elites are doing. And you saw it with P. Diddy and all the stuff that occurred with that. It's out there. They believe that the younger the child, the more pure or clean that they are. And obviously, I truly know for a fact that some of these children that get trafficked, are trafficked because of bad policies within an administration. And not to get political at all, but when you bring across your border hundreds of thousands of undocumented children and put them with these alleged sponsorship families, and you do not do any type of screening or background check on them, then you do absolutely no follow-up, and then you have a hotline, and there were over 60,000 calls to the hotline that they never followed up on these children. You have hundreds of thousands of children missing. They're being trafficked. And those are the most vulnerable, and they go missing, and there's no accountability. So now we're seeing, I believe just the other day in Texas, there was over 100 something children that were rescued, 200 something people that were arrested for human trafficking. It's all around us. And you don't know, the younger they are when they kidnap them or abduct them, especially if they're coming from war-torn areas or poverty-stricken areas, the less documentation, there's no digital footprint. So if it's an older person, we all have cell phones, we have a digital footprint. But when they're young, they have zero digital footprint.
They
It's
just
easy to
disappear.
abduct them, easy to take, they disappear. And then when they're done with them, they organ harvest. They're done.
Tell me
They take
about
their
that.
skin.
We got a
So
couple minutes before
that's
the
something that
commercial break.
nobody
Tell
ever
me
wants to
about that,
talk
because
about.
nobody talks about this. Nobody writes about
No,
this. Nobody even
absolutely.
understands that that's going on in a country like ours. That's probably happening in other
Absolutely.
countries like where you're at. But
Yeah.
what is that all about? Because that
So
organ harvesting is huge.
it's all orchestrated with the cartels, okay? Because cartels discovered a long time ago that I can buy drugs and sell them once and make a big profit, or I can buy a person and sell them tens of thousands of times over and over and make more and more profit. And then when I'm totally done with them, I can sell their organs. I can sell their skin for $100,000. I can sell a kidney for $150,000, $200,000. The eye, the retina, their every body part can be used. They will take these children to these doctors across the border in Mexico, and whether it be willingly, the doctors are doing it, or by coercion, if you don't do it, we're going to kill you and your whole entire family. They'll actually do the blood work to see if somebody fits as a donor for this individual that's in the market, the black market, looking for this specific organ. And if they're a fit, then they're going to get that organ. And here's how it works. You have, this being in the medical field, you have a transplant list that can take 7 years, and many people die during this wait. And good people who just want to live, they have no negative criminal intentions behind them. They just merely want to live, and that's it. And they have a little bit of capital, and they hear that there's somebody who can get you an organ, something that I must have to live. So I understand wanting it, but here's the catch. You're willing to not ask any questions where it comes from. And what you don't know is nobody's just volunteering to give these things up on the black market. 100% of them are being taken, and then the people are being disposed of as if it's just a crop. They call it organ harvesting because it is just like that, and you're done with it. Whatever's left, I mean, they try and use as much as they can. I just remember when the cartels would kill people back when I was working deep undercover with the feds. They would acid bath their bodies, whatever was left, grind their teeth, and there was absolutely zero trace of them. You would never find these people, and that's what's happening. You're here. you're hearing about it more and more now, but still people are afraid to talk about this organ harvesting. And I write all about it in my book. It's out there, and it's what they do when they're on the tail end, when they're done with the people they've human trafficked. And they don't want them to run their mouth. They don't want them to go to the authorities, and they feel like they still have some good use out of them. Now, if they kept them drug induced forever, there are certain body parts that they can't use that are, you know, destroyed that for the drug addiction. But, you know, for the most part, it's happening more and more and more. And human trafficking, I think it's surpassed, you know, drug trafficking. It's about $170 billion a year industry right now. Human trafficking. I'm sure it's probably more than that. That's just kind of ballpark where it's at, and it's getting worse. I will say though, it's helped to have a tighter border. I mean, without a doubt. You know, unfortunately, America is one of the main consumer nations for victims of human trafficking. There is a clientele that want people to be their slaves.
Yeah, they're getting their little planes and they fly over to the Philippines or something to do it over there.
Get a boat, come pick them up here in Haiti. I mean, it's very simple. I lived in Liberia for 2 years in West Africa as a senior volunteer inspector general over the National Police Force there. And they were post-Civil War, post-Ebola, and they still had a poverty-stricken area. And they were just as vulnerable as anybody else. In Africa, like, there wasn't a border. Like, you could come from one country to another because 50 countries in that continent is massive and poverty stricken. And you could transport people all over the place. And you would never, ever know somebody's missing, because accountability of somebody, especially if they're 18 years old and you can't prove there's any foul play, the police are more than likely not going to investigate. If they're 18 and they went on spring break to Mexico and they end up disappearing and you can't prove there's any foul play, they voluntarily went over there. I'm sorry. What are you going to do? At one point, there was a website that used to track all these missing girls and boys that left for like first week, graduated senior year, go to Senior Frogs and do the stuff there. And they went missing. And they took it down for some reason. I don't know who took it down, but I remember when I was a special agent working undercover, I used to go look at that website, and it's completely gone now. But it used to be, there was over 1,000 names on it. Of kids that are missing from America. And you just don't ever hear about it. So when we're taking the fight to the cartels, we're taking the fight to terrorists. These are narco terrorists. I've called them that for 25 plus years. So when I was in Afghanistan for 3 years, I was a national commander, built a 5,000 man SWAT team for the whole nation of Afghanistan. So when I went there, I left as a special agent with DEA, went straight over there. 95% of the whole entire world got their opium from Afghanistan. Okay, so that funded Al-Qaeda, right? Taliban was the street fighters. Al-Qaeda were the masterminds. So 95% of the whole world got their opium from there. So narco-terrorism, it was 100% funded. All these attacks we were seeing across the world from Al-Qaeda, they were all funded through narcotics. That was it. So if you don't put those two together, which our current administration has, but if you don't put those two together and call them what they are and really take it to them, these guys, man, I had people that I work with beheaded. I've had many of people murdered by the cartels. I can tell you for a fact, they're the most ruthless. They will skin you alive. They've sent videos of them execute. When I was a special agent, they sent us a video of them executing more than 50 people, individually, separate incidents, telling us, one of the cartels, to back off or you're next. Tell the DEA this. So this is what we're dealing with. So when we have a strong I can tell you the DEA is probably stronger than it's ever been right now under this administration. And I'm really proud of where they're going as a former special agent. And I love to fight. You got to be aggressive. You're dealing with evil on this earth, and they don't see any other way. You can't kid glove these people. You can't soft on crime these people, because it just doesn't work. You have to be assertive, aggressive. But unfortunately, guys like me, are far and few. I'm maybe a one percenter in the realm of law enforcement, because unfortunately, most guys get into positions that I've been in, either U.S. contingent commander. I've been U.S. contingent commander to the United Nations for a whole country. I've been U.S. contingent commander abroad for many years. I've been a two-time chief of police, 36 county gang task force commander. I am the type of guy that doesn't last long in those positions, because politicians at first want you, They're like, oh, this guy can make us a safe city and he can arrest all the bad guys and take out all the gangs. And then when you actually do it, they're like, oh, well, there's a lot of press that comes with this. This is not really what I wanted. Maybe you're just not a good fit for us. Wait, not a good fit fighting crime? Not a good fit making people feel safe? So people think you're a problem when you're a serve. And guys like me, the citizens love you. Politicians don't like you so much.
Yeah.
Because they just feel like it brings a black eye on the community by being transparent, because I was always open and honest. I would tell you, if I made an arrest, I'd tell you. If we did a sting, we'd tell you. Unless it was an ongoing sting, we were flipping somebody, turn them into an informant or something like that. But it's the reality that we face. So we need more law enforcement to step up, especially the top tier leaders. Devote more staff to human trafficking, drug investigations, and terrorism. Instead of 5% of your whole entire police force devoted to what is 95% of all the crimes, you know, and I say that because that's what it is. That's the ratio. I say 95% of all crimes in some way, shape, or form is linked to drugs. Domestic violence because somebody's high or under the influence. Burglaries because somebody's stealing to support a drug habit. Home invasions are always drug related for the most part. Sheer violence because it's a drug deal gone bad, or gang activity, turf wars. It's all drug related. If you go after drug traffickers, you curtail all violent crime. I know for a fact I've done it. I've made cities the safest cities that were never even ranked. So it's such a simple concept. I write about it in my book, Leadership Under Fire. I tell about it. As a two-time chief, you know, I was asked to overlook some corruption when I found some dirty deeds being done within officers, and I was unwilling to overlook it, and I was terminated. Fought 14 months, got my job back, came back, indicted the mayor for crimes against moral turpitude, public corruption. He was convicted in a three-day trial of two of three crimes against moral turpitude, and then indicted the head of investigations for covering up suspects in a brutal 1984 cold case, rape and murder. And he pled guilty to that. So did they want me dead? Absolutely. My house was shot up. My dog was poisoned and killed. I had threats coming in the mail. But you know what? I stood hard and steadfast. And I never backed down. And that gained me a ton of support. But and I tell a little bit about that in Leadership Under Fire. It was a very public ordeal for me. But, you know, it gives me a black eye, you know, as a chief of police. Oh, you were fired, you know, and then you come back and then you in 2 years, you're the number one safest city in the entire state. You do all these 287% increase in drug arrests, 40 plus community based programs. Then the mayor that got indicted and convicted pushed to bring in some new council members. And they all came in to oust me. So 2 years down the road, new council's elected. 6 months later, I'm forced out. So it's just the way it works. And that's why I said a sheriff's guaranteed 4 years. A chief of police is not guaranteed tomorrow. So for me, I sleep very good at night. I have my integrity intact. I never have compromised myself. And for that, from that perspective, that's what motivates me. I don't ever. I would never compromise myself because I know, number one, God's watching, and number two, my children are watching. And then I'd be a hypocrite for everything I've always stood for.
Well, that's, I tell you what, Keith, and Thomas at the radio station, we're not going to take a commercial. we're on a roll. Let's not even stop. But since you've mentioned the book several times in this discussion, and it's the one on in the middle there with the blue outline of the figure Leadership Under Fire right there. I have read that. Chapter 7, even though the story is fascinating, Chapter 7 grabbed me, and it gave me some things that I can apply to myself personally in my own daily life. And tell me about what's happening, how the world makes decisions, how you make decisions, how politics makes decisions, and the best way for a leader to be able to make decisions, and that ability to be able to be proactive instead of reactive in everything that we do. Tell me a little bit about how you're wired to where maybe some of us can rewire some of our own skills that we failed.
Yeah, absolutely. So me personally, I've always been a guy who can't stand procrastination. So my wife will tell you that she laughs. She's a beast in and of itself, but I don't like to procrastinate. If I have something in front of me, I deal with it. So as a leader, when you come into an organization, and I've come as an outsider into multiple organizations to try and fix the organizations, when you see a problem in front of you, you don't say, no, I'm going to deal with that later. That's the problem you got to deal with. And I know you can prioritize problems and things like that, but when people see you come in as a new leader and they say, what is he willing to tolerate? And if they see that you're willing to overlook these things that they've been begging somebody to deal with for years, you have lost their hope from day one. So you always have to come in with the approach of you are going to have to work super hard. And in order to get everybody to buy in with what you're doing, that's going to entail not disciplining and being hardcore on people. It's going to entail mentoring and advising everybody and steering them in the right directions where you want to take an organization. And if you take the time to do that up front, if you take the time and get your core leadership, command staff, or your organization to sit down with every employee, find out their personal goals, their business goals, and then hold them accountable to those goals throughout the entire year. And then at the end of the year, you do it again. And you might see that, hey, you transitioned away from this. Well, that's because I got married, or that's because I had a child and I'm thinking differently now. Okay, let's revamp your goals. And my goal as a leader is to get you there. That's it. It's very simple. My goal as a leader is to be the biggest public servant and servant to my people. So when I come into an organization, I have to see, what do my people need? It may be getting them adequate pay, or it may be getting them equipment, or it may be showing them that I care by investing in training and putting them through training programs, or it may just be listening to them, giving them a voice, letting them feel like they're part of the organization. So for me, being proactive is everything. But if you don't have the basis of integrity, if you don't have that foundation of integrity, you're going to fail when it comes to having courage to take a stand on something. You're going to put on your blinders when something gets difficult.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't want to encounter that because the mayor doesn't want me to do that. No, your job is as a top
person. Can you turn the corner on that for me and put your badge down? Now what happens when you walk into your house? How does those same leadership principles flow into with your kids, with your wife, with your home?
100%.
It's tell me same. How you process you all to, that too. You can't go in there and go, hey, we're doing it this way, by God, my way or no way.
that happens when they're real little.
How do you deal with that at the home to where we can say, hey, wait, this doesn't only work at the office, but it works with me as a person?
It works at home just as much. Your children, and I realize this, I have four children. I have one that's 21 serving in the U.S. Army. He's deployed right now. I have one that just turned 19. I have one that's 16, and then I have an eight-year-old. So my children see everything that I do. They saw me take a stand. They saw me take it on the chin and lose my job. They saw me never back down and fight. So it taught them one thing. You never quit when you're in the right. If you're in the wrong, you admit to it, you take your licks, and you move on. But when you're in the right and you're done wrong, I'm willing to lose everything on principle. And I've lost almost everything. It's very expensive to fight a legal battle. You know, and I'm willing to do it over and over again, but it's difficult. So me at home, when I'm at home, is as your kids are younger, you know, and they get older, you have to demonstrate it. You can ingrain a little bit of healthy fear in the younger kids and respect. But respect is what's going to keep them doing things the right way when you're not around. So my kids all know that if they go out, they're going to get into things. I've had three teenagers at one time. You know, when they're going out with their friends and the drugs come into play, or somebody pulls a gun on somebody or something like that, I've gotten those phone calls in the middle of the night. Dad, can you come get me? So we worked out a program with my kids. Is I got them on Uber. I have them all an Uber account. And they know there will be never a question asked. If you need to get out of a situation, you push that button and you call an Uber. And it's happened more my second son than my other ones, you know, but for the most part, they know they're going to have that in me. And I've always, always talked to them about drugs and human trafficking, especially my daughter, about being a victim, and things like that. Because she's a beautiful girl. She's a cheerleader. She's into all these extracurricular things. And I know that that's what they're looking for. They want that type of girl. But most predators, when they see a father, they say more than anything, that is present, they are not going to go after the children when a father is present.
How because if they know a father is
present, oh yeah, they don't want that fight. And it doesn't have to, you don't have to be physically like a big, tough guy, anything like that, but present. If you're present, they know there's going to be a fight. And an angry father or an angry mother is somebody you don't really want to mess with, especially when it comes to their children. So just being present, being involved in your children's lives, I really think that's the key. I'm not a perfect father. Every parent has struggles. Teenagers will give you PTSD. That's a fact. I mean, they will test you through and through. I believe it's harder raising teenagers than working deep undercover in the cartels. So I have tons of respect for parents. So I actually wrote two children's books. I have a third one that's being illustrated right now. It's the Character and Confidence series. And it's about teaching valuable lessons to youth and to spark conversations. And they're all based upon my kids and things they encountered in the real world. And that you read these books and it teaches the kids to ask questions and it sparks a conversation with the parent. So when you're having a difficult time talking to them about the internet or a difficult time talking to them about chivalry, some dying things in society, or bullying or not cheating on a test or saying no to drugs, saying no to vaping, all that, it's all in there. Being kind to animals, the books cover it all. So I'm writing books like that as part of hitting that younger generation, because my other books are hitting the older generations.
Right.
The Narc's Tale series Undercover is exciting, but it teaches you a ton. I had almost a 30 year narc tell me, he said, "Man, I learned more from your four books than I learned 30 years working narcotics." I said, "There is no way." He said, "Let me tell you why." He goes, "I never worked undercover and I never understood that side of things. And if I would have read this early in my career, I would have been a hell of a lot better narc." I was like, man, that's the greatest compliment I ever received from that book series. Absolutely. So for me, that's what I want from all my books. I want all my books, like you said earlier, the book Leadership Under Fire touch you and you're not in law enforcement. It's not made just for law enforcement. Right. Now it has an element for that. My book Built to Lead is straight up leadership. It's the foundation to principles for any organization. As a matter of fact, I don't even talk about law enforcement in the book at all. Because I felt like I just wanted to go to the core principles and tell stories from a general perspective of leadership. And every bit of my leadership teachings are a foundation of integrity. Because without it, you're nothing.
Yeah.
You have zero.
So, Keith, with your parenting, with your home life, what happens when you make a mistake? I'm wrong.
Absolutely.
I messed up. How do you handle that? How do you recommend parents?
I've made those mistakes.
Yeah.
And I'll give you an example. I went through a divorce 5+ years ago. And as anybody knows, I get along great with my ex now and I'm happily remarried. And but there's emotions going on with that. And I raised my voice to my ex-wife in an argument in front of my kids. That was it for me. I knew I didn't need to be in that environment doing that. And I had to come back the next day and sit down with my kids with my ex there and apologize to them. And I felt like that was huge for them to see that. And for them to see, when I was fighting for my job for 14 months when I was fired as a chief of police, the weekend I got saved, I got rebaptized. I got saved. The very next weekend, they call an emergency city council meeting. They rescind my termination as unlawful. They back pay me 14 months, reinstate me the very next day as chief of police. If that tells you anything, don't lose your faith. Don't become jaded because of a few evil, bad people, and don't hold a grudge against those people. Like, I'll never forget what they did to me, but it's not my job to punish them. They don't have to answer one. And I pray they repent, but they have to answer to God, not to me, because I'm nobody. And I literally am nobody. Like, I truly believe my strength is absolutely zero without God. And it's 100%. I get all my strength from him. And I'm a beast when it comes to fighting and mental strength. hands down. I'm one of the strongest people I know, and I know a lot of tough guys, but it's all because of God. I'm not a tough guy. I was raised with good principles. My dad was a 22-year United States Marine. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, probably the kindest human being you'll ever meet in your life. I had a great foundation, and I feel honestly blessed that I had that. And I think it's my duty, my role, to pass that on to the next generation. And you don't have to be soft with your kids. You don't have to buy them everything. You hold them accountable. You be there. You love them. You're there for them in hard times. And they got to know they can pick up that phone. My son just like 2 weeks ago took this sales job out of state. And he thought it was going to be something, this big thing. And he got there and it really wasn't what he thought. And they were trying to make him pay for all these different things. And he felt comfortable enough to pick up the phone and call me. I said, I told you, you can always call me and I will get you home. So airline ticket the next day, used the Uber Touch on his phone, went to the airport, and he flew back in. And now he's got to pay me back some money for all that. But the reality is your kids have to know you're there for them. Yeah. You know, whether or not, like, I've deployed 8 years of my life. I spent 6 years deep undercover, more than 6 years as a chief of police. I was absent a lot.
Yeah.
But I was always there. Pick up a phone. It doesn't take a whole lot for your children to know you love them. Know you care about them. Tell them you love them. That's the big one. Yeah. Tell them you love them. And if you don't, you're missing the opportunity. Every time you talk to them, say it. It can become cliche or just a repeat, but say it, because it does stick in their head. Yeah. It's very important to tell them that.
That's great. Before we're out of time already. Before we close down for the evening, if you had in just about a minute, time we have left, if you had the ability to be able to talk to Congress in the presence of all the leadership in our government right now, president on down, what would you say that we're doing right, we're doing wrong, we need to change, we need to correct to get our country back on track, even though I think we're doing a pretty good job under the circumstances. Yeah. What would be the wisdom that you've learned in all these other countries that we better be careful or we're going to become like? What would you say?
Absolutely. You know, I think we need to take a step back from politics. And I'm one that gets caught up in it myself as well. We need to take a step back and realize, I believe we all want the same fundamental things. I believe people want to be safe and they want, like, sanitation, basic sanitation, cleanliness, safety, security, those factors. But just because you have a political difference doesn't mean you don't want the same thing. So we can concentrate on some of the things that we do enjoy, the commonalities. That's got to be the path forward. But I will tell you, from a perspective of somebody who's worked with more than 85 different national police forces, 85. Okay. And it was funny. I counted them and I was blown away. It was 85 plus. If we do not hold people accountable for things they do that are in violation of the law, peaceful assembly is okay. Rioting, attacking police officers is never okay. If you do not allow law and order to be the mainstream, then you will become no better than any third world country. And I have seen personally what mob violence does. It kills and murders people. I've seen 20-something people in the one day I was out involved. 20-something people were killed in the same area I was in. Just sheer mob violence. I remember mob violence killing a guy who was suspected of a drive-by shooting, and he didn't even do it. They just murdered him because they never gave him a trial. They never gave him the ability to go through any due process or anything like that. So we have to hold people accountable. And we have to tighten our borders. It's basic 101. We're the most sought after nation to live in. So we have to make sure we're secure. Just like putting a lock on your front door, you do it to protect what's inside. You don't do it to be evil to the outside. You're trying to protect what's inside. And we all need to work together to come up with a better process to bring people here legally. Because there are a lot of good people that want to come here, and our process is convoluted and it takes a long time. But some of these countries don't have background checks or anything like that. So it is difficult at times.
Yeah. Thank you, Keith. I'll tell you what, this has been a fascinating hour. All I had to do was say good evening, and you took off.
I've
That is
enjoyed it,
absolutely
man. I've
awesome.
enjoyed it.
Two or three books that I recommend, and I recommend all of them, but the ones that I have read personally, and I want to just say to the listeners right here, because our listeners love to read and buy
Nice.
books. Shattered Chains is unbelievable. Leadership Under Fire is
Yes.
absolutely awesome. Built to Lead is second to none.
Nice.
I'm going to get the rest of them eventually,
Thank
just
you so
get three at a
much.
time. But I got mine on Kindle. Immediately, I started reading them. Before you all go to bed tonight, pick one of
Nice.
these out. And you can do it on Amazon, do it right there on the webpage, whatever you decide to do. But you
Absolutely.
need to read Keith's work, because it's absolutely some of the best reading, Keith, that I have done. And I read books
Wow.
every week that I have
Thank
read
you so
for a very
much.
long time.
Thank you so much. I
Thank you
appreciate
so
that.
much for being here. I'd love to have you back.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Okay. Well, be safe over in Haiti, and
God bless.
we'll ask God to keep you protected
Thank
in
you.
what you're doing. And
Pray for our soldiers.
yeah, absolutely. They're on the line in a major way right now, and
No
because we
doubt.
don't know where the next bullet's coming from,
That's
and
right.
we got to keep them in our prayers. Thank you, Keith, for being with us. God bless you.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
Appreciate you.
we'll see you soon. We'll talk soon.
All
Thank
right.
you.
Bye-bye.
As we do each and every week on the program, and I think Keith alluded to it several times, we all go through periods, months, weeks, hours, instances of hell. We all experience some type of emotional, physical, spiritual, relational, financial, whatever it is, trauma that sometimes can really get up in here in our minds and mess us up. I want to let you know, you have to find something that you can land on that's going to be solid for you. That foundational truth for me is God's word, and Jesus Christ is my Lord and Savior. You have to have something that in this crazy world, that when all gives up, you land on something solid that won't crack, that won't give way. Whatever that is for you, find it. I don't think it'd be wrong tonight to say, give God a chance, lean into him. But I do, and I promise you, no matter what you're going through right now, as we always end the program, there is always hope. Never give up on hope. Thanks, Keith, for being with us tonight. Join us right here next week for another edition, live from Houston, Texas, for Breaking the Silence. God bless. Have a good week. Good night now.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.